This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
I'm Hemant Mehta.
And I'm Jessica Blumke.
And you're listening to the podcast for FriendlyAtheist.com. You can now listen to all of our episodes and see show notes at FriendlyAtheistPodcast.com. Recently, Ray Comfort, who you all know because he made a video about bananas and how they're the atheist's worst nightmare, and not too long ago, he made a movie called 180 about why abortion is a totally horrible, horrible thing. Well, Ray Comfort just came out with a movie called Audacity, and this is one of those video on demand, you could download it for $20, and that's what we did. Jessica and I both downloaded this movie, we watched the movie, and we are going to discuss it with you guys for the first time. And what we're going to do, we'll give you a synopsis of the movie and then we'll, we've watched it, we've taken notes on it, and we've said nothing to each other about it.
We've waited until now to talk about it. I feel like disclaimer is in order. Don't rent this movie. Like, I'm sure nobody will, but don't. It's not, don't do it.
I'll disagree with you. You should rent it, but you should do it with a big group of friends. And then do it like one of those nights where you just want to laugh.
I mean, like, if you have a drinking game for it, maybe. Like, I was not drunk when I watched this movie, which was the worst mistake I've ever
made. When should they take a drink? And by the way, this is an anti-gay movie. So this is one of those movies that is condemning homosexuality.
Yeah.
When should people take a drink if they're going to do shots with this?
Every time you want to punch Ray Comfort in his face. Because he does make an appearance, sort of, like in...
He does appear in the movie.
Okay, I think we need to...
Okay, well, back up.
I'm gonna make up the drinking game as we go. I'll write it down.
Here's what we're gonna do. We'll go through the plot for those of you who, you know, may not see the movie, and I can't imagine why you wouldn't. We're gonna go through the plot, and then we'll back up and talk about what happens. So, it starts off... There's two main characters, really, in the movie.
Yeah.
One is Peter. Who... As far as I can tell, I still don't know what he does for a living. Something on a bike. He's a bike messenger.
No, they're very illicit about he's a bike messenger.
Whatever that means, because I don't know what he delivers. Person. Yeah. He's on a bike.
An envelope at some point. He delivers an envelope. Anyway, he's on a bike. He's
super Christian.
Super Christian. But just became Christian like a year and a half ago, he mentions.
And now he's fervent about it. But he has difficulty evangelizing to people. So he wants to talk about Jesus, but he doesn't really know how to. And when it comes to homosexuality, especially, he gets really tongue-tied about it. So, you know, he'll run into gay people. At one point, he runs into a gay couple, a lesbian couple, on an elevator.
Yeah.
And they're obviously together.
Uh-huh.
And he wants to say something to them.
Well, because the premise is he's on the elevator, they're holding hands, and they're smiling. And he goes, oh, you look happy because people talk to strangers on elevators in this universe, which don't do that.
And the gay couple says to him,
we're getting our marriage license. We're so excited.
And he's like, oh.
And they do like a close-up on his back jeans pocket. And he's like pulling out this
the Christian pamphlet on homosexuality.
Which he just happens to have locked and loaded. Like, at all. Like, I like to imagine he has pockets for every scenario. Like, atheist, gay people, polygamy, and like...
He's wearing cargo pants just to stuff them all in there.
No, I was thinking like a trench coat
with several different pockets.
Anyway.
That would be creepy.
Yeah.
So he's about to pull out the homosexuality pamphlet.
And then decides not to
because he doesn't really know how to say it to them. And I'm going to forward. We'll come back to this scene in a moment.
Yeah.
But this happens throughout the movie where he wants to say something, but he doesn't.
Right.
Let's talk about this elevator scene because I want to talk about it now. He gets out of the elevator, the lesbian couple gets off the elevator. Peter is still in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden,
pass the guy in the suit who like sees them holding hands and like does this like, oh brother, eye roll.
Yeah, the
like,
lesbian couple goes to get their marriage license and this guy sees them and he's pissed off at their existence.
Obviously.
So,
which I will note that this in a similar fashion to Left Behind, which we also watched for reasons. they do a really good job of making their party look like assholes.
Yeah, they're right? honest about how we think they would act in these situations.
It's like they set up their own straw man on either. Anyway, so...
So the lesbians go get their marriage license. Peter, who is played by Travis Owens, who we'll talk to in a little bit.
So excited.
Peter is still on the elevator. The elevator malfunctions, and it's like the beginning of Speed or something.
Yes.
The elevator malfunctions. It's a slight malfunction. Uh-huh. And eventually, Peter's able to get off the elevator.
Like, it's the...
No
the,
drama.
Like, it's stuck halfway between floors, and then, like, the
doors aren't really
jammed.
Opening. But he he opens them up after talking.
Well, he hits a call button, and he was like, this is what's happening. They're like, okay, try it now. And he's like, okay, it's working. I have to go. And the guy's like, from the call button, like, no, you have to stay there to make sure nobody gets on.
Right. So Peter gets out of the elevator, and the operator's like, don't leave.
Because people will die.
Yeah. If they get on the elevator after him...
people will die. So he chews some gum, gets a piece of paper. It says, danger, do not use.
Yeah, because he's not going to stick around.
No,
he has work to do, whatever
fine.
He does.
I'm fine with this character development. So he leaves, suit guy with the shit face, comes back.
Sees the danger sign with the gum sign. Stapled to the elevator.
And then... What, here's the lesbians coming, mark?
Something
like
that.
Yeah, I think
here's the lesbians
and then
coming.
And he sees them, and the guy, as he's running past, what's-his-face is like, make sure nobody gets on there. You gotta help me, dude. And the guy's like, okay. And then he hears the lesbians coming, and he goes, and he says, like, uses the words, if somebody gets on that elevator, they're gonna die. Which I don't know. Anyway, so the guy comes back, sees the lesbians coming, pulls the sign off the door, crumples it up and throws it around and walks away and lets the lesbians get on the elevator.
Which is really the Christian thing to do right
Which,
there.
Which, Jesus. And then...
Next thing we
the
hear...
The guy comes back, our hero comes back, sees the elevator door closing with
He's
the,
like, no!
Like, literally, it was like the
You
the
failed
third,
to save the lesbians.
It was like the third prequel of Star Wars when Darth Vader is like, no! For like 45 seconds?
I've never seen Star Wars.
That's fine. Wait, any of them?
No, I don't think so.
Like in the prequel? Okay, we're gonna talk about that later.
But yeah, he's like, oh no, lesbians.
Dives onto the elevator.
Can't stop it.
And then you hear screaming and crashing, lesbians dead. And then smash cut, Travis wakes up in bed. Travis?
Peter is the character.
Is Travis the actor?
Travis is the actor. Peter wakes up in bed. It was all a nightmare. Whew. Okay, so...
Which the emotions I felt when he woke up in bed were both, like, horrified and relieved. Because I was like, if this is the ride we're getting on, that people are dying in elevators, like, I'm 1,000% on board for this movie.
So, obviously, this is all a giant metaphor that the Christian was supposed to lesbians from impending doom. He didn't do it, and he let the lesbians die when he could have saved them. Yeah. There's our heavy symbolism right there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I hate to grant this movie any merits, but it's after watching this movie, I'm like, if they actually feel that way, if they actually feel that, like, saving me from hell or whatever is, like, saving me from, like, crashing an elevator, like, I mean, I get why they're, like, all up my ass about it, but...
Because you have to save them, then, if that's how you feel.
If they really go home feeling that guilty, that, like, my friend is gay.
Penn Jillette from Penn and Teller, he's answered this question. Someone's asked him, like, how do you act when someone gives you a Bible? And they think he's going to be mad about it because he's an outspoken atheist. And he says, I appreciate it because I know that if they really feel I'm going to hell, I appreciate that they're giving me a Bible and reaching out to me like this because they want to help me.
If the stakes are really that high, then, like, of course you're going to do... Anyway. Okay, so he's in bed. Wakes up. Didn't it start in the comedy club, though?
So there's a side story going on here where Peter, the character, is in a comedy club. His friend is a stand-up comedian who... It's apparently funny, but I didn't catch any of the jokes.
Okay, it wasn't...
As someone who has done stand-up comedy, what'd you think of our stand-up comedian friend?
First of all, I was baffled by his existence in the movie.
Because he doesn't fit into the plot
line. He did not drive the plot
He's like
anywhere.
A friend of Ray Comfort's who they wanted to just stick in the movie.
I will say his impersonations, which is all his stand-up. It wasn't
his stand-up is just...
It was just impersonations.
Impersonation after impersonation.
They weren't bad. Like, they're kind of funny. Yeah. But, like, I mean, they weren't... they were spot-on impressions.
They were good impressions.
There was no writing
around it. But what the hell
it.
Does that have to do
which
with anything?
The writing in this... I mean, you and I are both human beings who make our living as writers.
Right.
how offended are you by the writing of this movie? Because I was, like, my heart hurt by just, like, the, like, and I'm not even, I don't even, write screenplays. I just, there was no plot to this movie.
Right. That elevator scene we just talked about took about, let's say, 10, 15 minutes altogether.
Yeah.
And then when they moved on to the next scene,
it was,
it's something different.
So he.
I want to just mention one thing about the, so this elevator scene, he gets so disturbed by it and he wakes up. So we'll keep going. He wakes up from the nightmare and he's like, I should not be letting that happen. I should have saved those lesbians from the elevator, even though that didn't happen in real life. And the next thing he does is goes online to search, how do you talk to people about homosexuality?
And then he says, how do you even evangelize to homosexuals?
And guess who he finds on Google?
Ray fucking Comfort.
Ray fucking Comfort. So he finds Ray Comfort videos and all of a sudden...
And watches them in their entirety.
We do a supercut of Ray Comfort talking to random strangers on the street, which is what he does, where Ray Comfort is asking random strangers about homosexuality.
I was squirming in my seat watching this. It made me so uncomfortable because these questions that he's asking these poor people were just, were awful. And like, I wrote, wait, what did I write? I almost forgot Ray Comfort is the worst. Because he is the, like, these like personal prodding questions he's asking strangers, which, again, if he's, I don't know. I don't.
Here's
I just,
the when he talks
so
to people, he basically says, "Can I catch you on camera? I'm going to ask you a series of questions," and they always
really
say yes.
Unflattering camera angle because he films like from a hip.
But so basically, the whole thing is he starts out like, "Are you born gay?" And everyone pretty much is like,
except for one gay guy.
Except for one gay guy who said, "I chose whatever." But most of them are like, "Yes, you are born gay." And then Ray Comfort kind of turns the tables where he's like, well, are you a born adulterer?
Are you a born
are you a
question.
Born fornicator?
Is fornication, this is, I know this is such a softball question. Is fornication different from just having sex?
No. But you, I guess you can't say sex in a Christian movie. So fornication is the biblical word.
I didn't know fornication was like having sex outside wedlock because he said.
No, it's just sex, period.
But so they're saying all fornication, if you have sex, you're going to hell? Because
I think the assumption is fornication is the bad kind of sex. Unmarried sex.
Oh, so gross. Like.
So are you a born fornicator? And all these people are like, well, no, you chose to commit adultery. You chose to have sex outside of marriage. You chose to cheat or
then
do whatever.
And then he says, do you think you're going to heaven? Everybody says yes. Everybody says yes. Although the one guy's like, if I don't repent my ways, probably not. And I'm like, all right, well, this guy can go. But he was like, okay, let's run through the 10 commandments. And so he runs through all the commandments with every single person. Have you ever taken the Lord's name in vain? Have you ever stolen? Have you ever
And
lied?
Everyone says yes. And I've done all these things.
So you're telling me you're a liar, you're a fornicator, you're a blasphemer. He loved blasphemer. He said that a lot. Tells everyone they're going to hell. And cut it in such a way that everybody was like, well, thank you so much for telling me that.
Yes, thank you for saving me.
And he
me.
Always says, does that make sense? And they always say, that makes sense, which I think Ray Comfort needs to learn the difference of thanks because I agree with you and you helped my life and thanks, please leave me alone. Like, I don't know what to say to get you to stop talking
to
me.
Here's my problem with this question. He basically says something like, you know, are you a born cheater? No, you choose to. Then he flips the table. Oh, so are you born gay? And they're all like, oh, I guess you choose to be gay. As if he made a point. Wait. By the way, there are videos online with him.
Uncut?
Uncut interviews. And you could tell that in the final product, he is editing these to suit his needs, which is his right to do, but it is kind of deceptive. But the problem I have with these random interviews is when you interview strangers who don't talk about this stuff regularly, you're going to catch them off guard. And it's to me, it's unfair that you're using these people who have no business talking about this stuff. Like, talk to experts.
Right.
Don't talk to random strangers as if they are proving your point they don't know what they're doing.
To me, it's like the difference between saying, I'm going to, like, maybe talk to the Jehovah's Witness who comes to my house, or I'm going to talk to, like, a pastor versus I'm going to, like, assault people outside of church and be like, do you really think that Jesus was real? Like, I'm not going to, that's a shit move.
Right.
And, like, nobody
and, like,
comes
what do
out
they know?
Good.
They're not the experts here. So for me to use their answers to prove my point.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you couldn't handle the big boys, and in a sense.
And he kept saying, I'm not judging you, but...
But God is.
Yeah, which... Yeah.
By the way, when I did the Sold My Soul on eBay thing, I did an interview with... I don't think it was Ray Comfort, but it might have been his co-host.
In bookstores they did, now.
Yeah, they did the same interview with me, where, are you a good person? Oh. Have you ever lied? So are you going to hell? Whatever. And, you know, you can try to finagle your way out of the questioning, and it's a magic trick. I mean, there's a way to get you to admit you're a bad person, Jesus has to save
you. The only way you can come out on top is saying, like, well, I don't believe in hell, so this is all non-consequential to me.
Right.
But, like, even then, I'm sure, I don't know.
So Peter watches these videos in the movie, mm-hmm. and he comes away after watching like 5 minutes of Ray Comfort Supercut thinking, yes, I know how to evangelize now, and I have to. He's like nodding his head as he watches.
Oh, this is a little hard.
And so all of a sudden he goes to work mm-hmm. where he runs into his colleague, Diana.
What is their relationship?
I think they're just colleagues at work.
But at the end, it seems like they're like best friends or like love interest. No, but, oh well.
They never do anything about love interest.
No.
They just kind of keep it
that'd
as
be too interesting.
There's like tension there, but really they're just coworkers.
Okay, I do want to say this. I hated this movie. I did. I did not enjoy watching it. However, I blame the writing and the direction. I found the actors kind of winning in this movie.
Yeah,
is that all? Like, I thought they were likable.
Yeah.
And like when they had little like moments of like bad jokes, yeah, it was tacky, but I thought they were really winning.
They did well with the script that they had.
They did. And that's not just because we're going to be talking to the actor. I would be saying that anyway. I found them winning, especially the lady person. She seemed, I don't remember her name.
Molly
or her
Ritter
character's
is the
name.
Actress's name.
She's
Molly
not
Ritter.
Related to John Ritter.
No,
she?
I don't think so. And Diana is the character she plays. By the way, to his credit, mm-hmm. Ray Comfort said explicitly he was not looking for Christian actors.
Right.
He was looking for good Hollywood actors. They had a real casting call for this. We'll talk to Travis about that when we talk to him.
But they found
real actors and they were good.
Mm-hmm.
Diana, the character in the movie, mm-hmm. she talks to Peter and basically he's talking to her about religion, which she's like, she wants to shy away from. She doesn't want to talk about religion with him.
But at one point, don't they start that religion that he mentions she's a Christian, and doesn't she say something about like, goes right into like, how do you feel like, do you think gay people need to be stoned? Which like, like you jumped right there. Like,
yeah. When he says he's a Christian, she starts like, she gets a bad look on her face.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like Christians because I know what they're like, which she reacted in the way anyone would react if you knew Ray Comfort was going to talk to you.
No, that's exactly right. But Mike, this whole movie is based around like Christians and non-Christians, but the non-Christians in the scripted part of the movie seem to have never met a Christian before in their entire life.
Yeah.
Like when when somebody tells them they're like a Christian, it's the same way like you or I would react. I can't even think of anything like dramatic enough to like for these people's reactions.
Yeah.
Like
it's always bad and it's always big.
It'd be like if it was somebody my age who I worked with and I knew really well, and all of a sudden they're like, I love Glenn Beck. I'd be like, wait, what? Like, do we have anything in common? But they're so appalled by like his mere suggestion of being Christian that
he didn't say, oh, you're all going to hell.
No,
if you don't,
he just
no,
said
he's
like,
just a nice
I'm a
guy
Christian.
Who says
she's
I'm a Christian.
Like,
yes. So they start talking about this and she asks him, she's like, oh, you're Christian. I'm like, oh, so you think gay people are going to hell?
Right.
And he says to her basically, it's not exactly like that. But
exactly
let me
like
show
that.
You some videos I found online. So it was a very short scene,
uh-huh.
but he gets out his computer basically. He's uh-huh. like, let me show you these videos. Oh, look, another Ray Comfort supercut of him talking to people about homosexuality, which is exactly what you do on kind of the first time you bring up religion, I guess.
No, that's softball.
And at some point after they do this again, mm-hmm. Diana tells Peter her brother has cancer.
Mm-hmm.
She's very upset by that, obviously. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know why it's happening. She's mad at God.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter says he's going to pray for her. And then the movie takes a really weird turn. And this is what Jessica's talking about with the writing.
Yeah.
We just cut to a scene in a convenience store.
Just in the
convenience
store.
Nowhere.
Trying on sunglasses.
Random people are in there. There's a gay couple in uh-huh. line. Peter's
to try on sunglasses. I don't want us to pass this by. They're in a convenience store and there's a line to try on the sunglasses. I don't understand why that was where we land. Anyway,
this is what you do in a convenience store. You go there to hang out like you would a mall.
But he was by himself, just like trying on. Anyway.
And all of a sudden, Peter is picking, he comes to the store to pick up some stuff. And there's a shady dude. You know he's a shady dude because he's wearing, like, hobo gear. Mm-hmm. And he has a creepy look on his face. And you know some shit's about to go down.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide if I'm more annoyed that there are zero black people in this movie or so grateful that, like, Ray Comfort didn't cast, like, the
black
one
guy thing. As the bad guy.
I just, like... anyway, it was
he was
really
a white,
white
hobo, basically.
He was a white hobo.
So the white hobo...
Long hair, like hippies.
decides to rob the store. Mm-hmm. Everyone's freaking out, understandably. Yeah. Peter's stand-up comedian buddy, who this is his only purpose in the film, is in the car waiting for him, realizes this is happening. Like, oh, there's a robbery going on in the store, and I'm in the car outside. Let me text Peter's coworker, Diana, and tell her Peter's getting robbed. Not...
It's serious. Like, there's a gun. Pray! 4 exclamation points.
Yeah, he's hiding in the car, by the way. He's not doing anything useful here.
I mean, I want to think that he also called the police, but I think he text messaged first.
Which is what you do. Call the... They're not going out, by the way. This is not his wife or his girlfriend.
No.
Just a random colleague at work.
But, I mean, she needs to get out and pray.
Yes.
So they're in the store. The guy is, like, going crazy. Like, the cops show up. And so it's Peter... And then the gay couple, and they're, like, all on the ground, and this is all happening, and everybody's screaming and yelling. There's a woman.
Robber is shocked, by the way, when he hears sirens. Like,
who called the police?
Because this makes no sense. Yeah, right? This is what everyone's trying to do. So he takes a hostage.
Yeah.
He takes the woman who's in the store, one of them, I think, takes her hostage, comes outside to the cops and says, if you come after me, I'm going to shoot her.
So, but before, like, this is the excellent screenwriting. So before, when they, like, drop on the ground, Peter knocks a can off a shelf. And by the way, the sound editing, which I know is the thing I should care about, but I can't help it. Like, he knocks a can off the shelf and it makes zero sound. It just, like, falls into oblivion. But anyway, which I only bring up to say he looks at the can.
Peter sees,
like,
the can. We get a close-up of the can. It's spinach, by the way, because he brought up that he likes Popeye, so it has to be a can of spinach.
Oh my God, I just got that.
You're welcome.
No.
You're welcome. So he grabs the can of spinach.
He says, shoot me, don't shoot her, shoot me.
Oh, right.
That
so
was his, like,
the hostage takes the girl, and Peter says, don't shoot her. Don't shoot anybody in the store.
Because you'll have to answer to God,
is
his first thing. And then he says, shoot me. And then he gets a gun to his head. He's like, no, don't shoot anybody, which... That's fine. I mean, I'm fine with that response.
I would probably do the same thing.
So anyway, Robert's outside.
Don't shoot me.
So Robert's outside, hostage. The police have no idea what to do. They're just standing there, kind of yelling. And then Peter gets the can, clobbers the guy along the head. He falls.
Doesn't clobber it. He throws it. He lobs the can at the guy's head. And a can of spinach knocks the robber out cold, apparently.
Yeah.
And that's it. Peter saves the day.
Saves the day. And then the gay couple comes up to him afterwards.
Oh, before we get to the gay couple, not only does the stand-up comedian friend in the car text Diana, he's okay, and she starts praying for him. My favorite part is Peter texts Diana, and he's like... He's like, we got the guy, or like the robber's
down. And then sends like a series of funny clips of
selfies.
Him
he's taking selfies.
With the can of spinach, like, I'm hitting the guy. Which, like,
with the robber in the car.
Event.
He almost died, and he's like, let me take a happy selfie with the robber in the car. And the cops let him.
Yeah.
Like, this is the most normal thing ever.
Which, this is, I think, when I wrote down, like, what is the relationship between these two people? Like, are they, between him and Diana, are they?
Better written screenplay, they would be going out by now.
Right.
But we have not established that in the movie. It's just kind of assumed they love each other, kind of.
I guess. Like, they're two attractive white people. That's what attractive white people do.
Is it?
I don't know. I'm not one.
So at this point, the gay couple comes out to Peter.
Yeah. They say, thank you so much for doing that. We want to bring you out to dinner.
Yeah.
And which is very nice. He's like, I got to drop my friend off. I'll meet you at this restaurant. And so they all meet at this restaurant. All three of them. And I don't know. How does it come? He brought up being Christian.
Like, I think the gay guys asked him, why did you do that? Why did you risk your life to save us?
That's exactly what it is.
And Peter said, it's because I'm a Christian. That's like what you do. And again, one of the gay guys is like, has the Ray Comfort reaction look like, oh, you're a Christian. So you probably hate the fact that we're gay.
So... And he does, okay, so that guy's clearly set out to be, like, straw man, bad guy. And yeah, like, that initial reaction is kind of shitty, but, like, What's his face immediately begins, like, again, with the pamphlets.
Peter has pamphlets on him.
All over the place. And he, like, starts bringing them out, like, it's, again, it's not me who hates gay people. It's like, you have to do
this. God hates gay people.
And right. So guy A is, like, mad and... how dare you? Which, like, yeah, I don't know. If I'm there with my partner and the guy is all of a sudden like...
giving me a pamphlet right, telling me I'm going to hell.
Thanks for saving me, but bye.
Yeah. And that's what he does. He leaves.
And he does say to his partner or husband, or who they don't really establish that, if you better not bring any of these pamphlets into our house, which I'm sorry, I'm still on his side. I'd be furious.
But the partner says, I will stick around and talk to Peter because I think I owe him that much in a sense.
Yeah.
He saved my life.
Yeah.
So Peter ends up evangelizing to this other gay guy.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, they definitely do the thing where they show time elapsing, courses happen, pamphlets are read. And more pamphlets.
And the best part is, in addition to the pamphlet, when it comes time, I don't know if it's time to tip the waitress, he hands her...
oh, fuck.
He hands her $1 million, which is really a gospel tract, which if you're a waitress, then it has to be the worst possible way to get a tip.
Sorry. Not if you're a waitress. When I was a waitress, that did happen to me.
You got a Christian
tract. Holy shit, I lost my mind. I was so... And in lieu of tip, which...
In lieu of a tip. Not in addition.
Not in addition to, like...
Oh, that would piss me off,
too. I'd gotten a few pamphlets, like, in the book, but one time it was like the... Oh, I was... God, beside myself. I was so mad.
And by the way, that pamphlet and the $1 million bill are all examples of product placement, because you could buy them on Ray Comfort's website.
Really?
Yes.
I love that. But Okay, in this... horribly unrealistic movie. The least realistic part of this movie was when it was like in a montage scene, the waitress came back with another waitress and asked for another $1 million bill. Cause they're like, oh, I love this pamphlet.
We want to pass these around to our friends. Yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
But like, and then they ended it with the guy kind of doing the like, oh, you have some good points sort of face, which...
So, yeah, as if the gay guy's gonna go home with a pamphlet.
What's the next scene in that guy's life?
Breaking up with his boyfriend, obviously.
And like...
joining a monastery.
Whatever. I can't even.
So at this point, the dinner is over. Peter goes to visit his friend at the stand-up comedy club where he dropped him off before dinner. And Diana meets him at the comedy club and tells him, I watched those Ray Comfort videos. And I am starting to believe.
They did like kind of a super cut of her. I think it was like in the midst of the pamphlet scene.
Yeah.
Of her like on her laptop in her dark apartment, like watching these videos, which is so compelling.
This is what you do in a dark apartment.
So compelling to watch is like somebody clicking around on a laptop. So she shows up. The comedy is happening. Oh my God.
Big quotation hands while you say comedy. And then she has an emergency. Someone texts her. She has to go home.
And you hear on the other side, it's her sister-in-law. Brother isn't doing well. You need to come watch the kids.
Right.
So she runs.
Takes her car, which has very little gas, starts to drive home.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point in the middle of this, whatever, few minute drive to home, her car runs out of gas.
But she passes a guy hitchhiking.
Yeah, there was a guy. She passed him. And she stops because the car runs out of gas, doesn't know what's going on.
And
she starts texting people like,
I don't know.
I need help, whatever. And crazy hitchhiker dude comes up and starts banging on her window like he's going to assault her, basically.
And she's screaming, being the most reasonable human in the world, trying to call the police, doing whatever.
Like, crazy man, like trying to break into my car right now.
The
guy's lines, by the way, are like,
God. Like crazy.
In the script,
yelling.
It clearly said yell.
Like muffled yelling, indistinguishable. The guy picks up a rock. Breaks her car window with alarming ease. Like,
it was very
way
easy.
Too easy. Like, it shattered, like, pane glass. It was awful.
Yeah.
Pulls her out of the car, and it turns out she had been on a train track and somehow didn't know, and he was pulling her out to save her from the train. So you see, Hammond, she thought he was trying to be mean to her and thought he meant her harm, but really he was saving her.
Yeah. You may not listen when someone's pounding on your car like that, and they may seem mean, but if you don't listen to those people who really have your best interest at heart, you're going to be in trouble.
Which is so, like, I don't know if victim blaming is the right word, but, like, a person who's having a normal reaction, a normal response to a thing, but, like, little girl, you didn't know what was best for you. This guy knew what was best for you. That kind of, it gave me shades of that.
By the way, all of this that we're saying, this is not our interpretation of the metaphor in the movie. They literally had a news camera come on afterwards, and they show a scene of like the news saying, you know, this man saved this woman from the train tracks. And then they, I wrote this down, they literally said on camera, I hope I'm paraphrasing this anyway, you may try to save someone and they won't listen, but you have to do it anyway because these things may not end well if you don't. They may not like you at first, those people who are being saved, but they will appreciate what you've done for them. Basically, they laid out the metaphor, threw it on you in case you weren't smart enough to pick it up. And we cut to the final scene. Diana wakes up in a hospital.
Wait, I'm sorry. Oh. Okay, I know that's the final scene, and I know that's a really important place to get to, but before we do that, when he's in, I just need to talk about when he's in the comedy club, and something happened that the guy comes on, and there's a premise at part of it. He was that the comedian friend said to our hero, when are you going to do stand-up? And he was like, oh, maybe next week. By that, I mean never, which, like, whatever.
Right. So Peter is an aspiring stand-up, but he's never going to do it.
But he's afraid or whatever. So the guy comes out and the host, the Australian imitation guy, leaves the stage. The host comes out and was like, our headliner is late, so we don't have a headliner.
Is weird.
Listen, I have not been doing comedy very long, and I'm not, like, prolific at it by any stretch. But that's not what happens. You're not like, we don't have a headliner. We're done. And then...
And like then offer free dinner to anyone who wants to come on stage to fill time.
But I mean, as soon as he was like, oh, the whatever, like there's no more show, people are like, how dare you? I want my money back. Which, like,
You didn't pay money to get into that show. You just bought drinks, first of all.
So somehow Peter ends up on stage because to fulfill a lifelong dream, which, like, why is this in this movie? And he's like, oh, I see you guys like imitations, because Buddy's imitations. I can do an imitation of
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe. And literally he steps next to the microphone and goes, are you not entertained?
Unquote.
And that's his...
That's it.
And people lose their shit.
It
is the funniest thing they've... Which, like, I just... I guess I'm confused about many things in the movie. I just don't get his journey. Really, like, what is...
He's been thinking about doing stand-up comedy for a long time. When he finally gets his big break, it's a 2-second imitation. That's fine, but that's not a set.
Okay, Hemant, what is this movie about?
So we got a few minutes, but...
No, I need you to...
I can't give you an answer. There's no answer to the movie. Diana gets up from this hospital coma that she's in because crazy man assaulted her. Oh. I don't actually know why she's in a coma because she was saved. But she wakes up from the hospital and Peter's there with flowers.
What is the relationship?
Yeah. And she tells him she's been reading the Bible. And by the way, we finally get a picture of her home. And it turns out there's a picture of Diana with her lesbian partner. Bombshell. It turns out she's the lesbian who needed to be saved all along. And all of a sudden, she switches sexual orientation because Peter's in the hospital now to save her. And Jesus saved her. And now they're all in a happy relationship.
I watched this with my fiancé. And I don't know why he watched it with me. He's, bless his heart. And he just said, after when the credits are rolling, I'm just so angry right now. Which I think is the only real response to that. Because it's not a fun, bad movie. It's the same thing as like Left Behind. It wasn't a fun, bad movie.
It was just...
Although in hindsight, I feel like I liked Left Behind a lot. Like,
there was a storyline in Left Behind.
There was a storyline.
Here was just a series of vignettes that weren't really connected, but they kind of were, as long as Ray Comfort was your connecting thread.
Baffling.
Like, no one will ever watch a Ray Comfort movie and then say, oh, homosexuality is a bad thing.
I mean, it's...
Who's going to do that?
The thing is, that's not... I don't think that's his goal, though. I don't think his goal... I think his goal is not to convince people that homosexuality is bad. I think his goal is to convince people who already agree with him to, like, go out and
evangelize against homosexuality.
Right?
That's
like,
true.
That... I mean, he's not changing anybody's mind. He knows he's not changing anybody's mind. Right?
Right. I think that's probably accurate.
Right?
You would hope he figured that out by now.
I don't know.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do.
Okay.
Yeah, you could tell. The movie made us angry. It's... we will say in credit, and not because we're talking to him, the acting was fine. Like I said, they went through a real casting agency. They cast real actors. The acting was fine. They did the best with the script that they had. The script, weird. And so here's what we're going to do. We are going to talk to Travis, and we're not going to talk about, I don't care about his opinion on the film. It's not his, I'm not asking the actor in the film to trash your film.
Well, because importantly, Travis has since come out saying that he's not religious right when,
Travis is actually very pro LGBT rights.
Right.
And so is Molly Ritter, who played Diana, which is fascinating.
So I think that's the important thing here. Not necessarily just that like he was in this.
And that's why we wanted to talk to him. It's like, you're in a Ray Comfort movie that's really anti-gay.
I wonder what Ray Comfort's like.
But you're totally for LGBT rights. And so is your co-star in this movie.
Yeah.
Is that weird? That's what I really want to know from him.
Yeah, I want to know what their conversations were on set.
Right.
We can ask him.
So we will ask him that. All right. We'll be back in a little bit.
All right. You just heard our review and analysis of the film. And now we're fortunate to have Travis Owens with us.
Travis Owens is an actor and comedian who stars in Ray Comfort's new movie, Audacity. The movie is about the horrible things that will happen to you if you're gay. Travis plays Peter, a very devout Christian who wants to spread the good word, but sometimes hesitates because it might be awkward. Because he hesitates, bad things happen. But what's really interesting to us is that Travis is actually very supportive of LGBT rights, which makes his appearance in this film really interesting to us. So, Travis, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Absolutely.
How did you first hear about this film? Like, how did you get involved with the production in the first place?
The shortest timeline that I have on letting you know exactly how I kind of came upon it was my manager contacted me, said, "Hey, I got a role that's a lead role in a pretty well produced feature," and of course you always say yes, and then you kind of look at everything, and then you do the audition. And I didn't have too much information on the film besides just the fact that it was faith-based. I'm not religious whatsoever, even though I was raised very, very religious. But, you know, I just went to the audition. It wasn't unlike any other audition I've been on, and just kind of went from there.
And I think that's one of the questions people might have about this film. I mean, we talked about this earlier, but of the many criticisms we have of the movie, one of the things we actually thought was pretty good was the production, was the acting. I mean, this looked in a lot of ways like a real movie. And that's, I mean, you know what I mean?
No,
and
it is a real
when you talk about a faith-based film, that's not always the case. And you're telling us that from your experience as an actor, this really was the same as any other audition you would go to. It wasn't like weird or different because it was a faith-based film.
Yeah, it actually wasn't at all from the point that I got into the casting room. I mean, the casting director, from my knowledge, is not a religious casting director whatsoever. So they even hired outside the church with the casting director, all the crew, to my knowledge, because I've worked with many of the other guys on my projects after Audacity to get everything kind of running. And I know for a fact that they're not religious, so... the one thing I can commend them on is they actually went outside the church to do this, because it's just it's excruciating to see any faith-based film to me as an entertainment lover in general. So they actually did the right thing there, and I commend them for that.
Yeah, and we did speak to Ray Comfort before doing this interview, and Ray Comfort said he did that on purpose. He did want to find the best people to put together this film because he, I think, is sick of the same production quality or lack thereof that we often see.
Nobody's seeing them. Yeah, nobody's seeing religious things, because if you're not religious, it's just a beating.
Yeah.
Right, like they they put their message beyond quality of writing, quality of production, quality of acting. Everything
it's
is all
so
about the
heavy-handed.
Message. Oh, God.
It's so heavy-handed, and you can be watching the best scene in the world, and when somebody says Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior, immediately you're offended and out of the scene.
At what point during this process, I mean, you know it's a faith-based film, which, fine. I mean, they're doing really well lately.
Yeah.
But at what point do you actually figure out, oh, this is what the movie's about?
You know, towards, I think that I got the complete script about a week before filming, after some kind of rehearsals of scenes. And I knew that the only thing that I knew is that the goal, the mission of the movie was from the beginning to open up the conversation between religious people and gay people. And that to me sounds like a great starting point
right.
to sure. something, you know, and that's was, that's as basic as it was. So I was like, I am interested in that kind of topic of discussion. And then it started to kind of form and evolve. And, you know, there were so many scenes in the movie that were even taken out because Ray himself even knew that they were too heavy handed.
Huh.
So it was, they had to add on scenes after the fact. And, you know, they did a lot of, study cases of, you know, mixed people as far as religion, beliefs, mm-hmm. everything like that to kind of give their, reviews of the movies, just the general population. And, you know, they
showed people like drafts of the film to get input
right.
and then revise
right.
stuff.
Right.
I'm really curious now what was kind of added in the last minute.
You know, the restaurant scene was one scene that was added in, which I think was a great thing to do.
The one that you were in?
That introduced my character to the gay couple.
Sure.
And we had that discussion where you kind of see both sides of it, although it's, I believe honestly that's it's still a bit heavy-handed, but again, I'm not a religious person whatsoever.
Right.
But it was.
And we talked about this. Kind of, you know. We talked about this earlier. This was mm-hmm. a scene where the two guys that you saved in a convenience store treated you out to dinner, and there's a discussion between you and one of the gay guys about religion and mm-hmm. homosexuality, mm-hmm. and a nice
right.
musical montage
with the right. million-dollar bill, which I said in the earlier one, I've gotten one of those as a tip, and I did not react the way your waitress reacted. I did not enjoy
that.
You
know what? You know what? I was a server at one point, and if I would have gotten one of those, I would have crammed it back into their mouth.
Well,
I couldn't deal with it. So you did better than I did.
Though as far as product placement goes, that's pretty ingenious because they are
right.
selling those bills on the Living Waters
oh, yeah.
website. So you don't actually know necessarily the full scope of the film or what angle it's taking until kind of close. I mean, it's way too late for you to back out at that point.
Sure, right? Yeah. I mean, you're contractually obligated at that point to finish the job, which it wasn't. It's never a thing about legality to me as an artist, and that's the unfortunate thing about an artist and what we worry about and what we consider with the job. It's not, am I in some hot water here? Am I treading thin lines here? It's, if you're an artist, hopefully you are. You know, hopefully you are making people think, and hopefully, you know, it sounds funny, but hopefully, you know, I have Christians because the interesting thing was, is after it finished, I had Christians, that came up to me and just were like dumbfounded at the fact that I wasn't religious. And I was just like, no, man, no, I just,
it's called
I'm
acting.
An actor. It's like, right. It's gay people didn't see that I was an actor mm-hmm. just trying to act. They always had an excuse that I was just some horrible money mongering entertainer. And even Christians were like, I'm really, really disappointed that you don't share our beliefs. And you guys were actually the only ones that wanted to have a discussion about it because I religion is fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, I mean, I'm a writer for a marketing company and I can 100%, like I've written things that I wouldn't necessarily ascribe to. Granted, my face isn't attached to it, but like, you know, it's your job. You're a professional actor. That doesn't, you can't be expected to always do like these perfect politically correct roles.
Right. And you told me this a little earlier too, which is that as far as acting goes, this is like almost 180 degrees different from who you are as a person,
mm-hmm.
which makes it a fun, challenging role in that sense.
And your face was on the poster.
It's not all. Yeah, it's not almost. It's 180 degrees of me. I mean, my little brother's gay, my best friend's gay, and my sister's gay. And the first thing I did is took this project to them and said, hey, this is what it seems like I'm doing here. And they were they were excited for me. They
were
genuinely excited because A, they know that they want to see me do that role because they're like, that is so opposite of you that I'd be interested in even seeing you play that role. And I'm a comic. This is not a role that is strictly for a comedic actor. So
it's a dramatic role.
Thing.
Yeah. And we brought this up a little earlier, too, which is that, yeah, you are an actor, but you are a stand-up comedian. And this is one of the things we talked about, because one of the things we were discussing earlier is it seems like the stand-up comedy aspect of the movie seems to come out of nowhere, but it does play to your strengths, and I think your colleague's strengths, who is also one of the stand-ups in that movie.
Right. Well, the funny thing is I would love to actually – I haven't asked Ray this for whatever reason. Maybe I just keep forgetting. But I would love to see if the reason that I was cast is just because I was a stand-up comic, because Ray himself is a very, very big, like, practical joker on set and what have you. So I don't know if he was like kind of fascinated with that about me or not, but it was weird kind of the whole time. But there was a lot that was improv'd in the movie by me that I think that they wanted that aspect to be there just to kind of lighten the mood of the movie.
Yeah. I really wish they had done more with like you doing the stand-up at the end, because especially come from a comedy background, I was like, you got up there, I'm like, oh, I'm going to see some Christian stand-up comedy, which I am really,
well,
really,
really
excited.
Funny, it's really funny that you said that, because the whole room was set up to do stand-up, and Ben Price, who is a very, very religious comic in Australia, has a set that is kind of catered toward like a G-rated audience, but I go up every night here in Los Angeles at the biggest clubs out here that are definitely not G-rated. Mm-hmm. But I would label myself a PG to PG-13 comic. So when they came to me and they were like, "Hey, do some comedy," and I was like, "Okay," and got on the mic, and they would like panic. And they would run to me. They'd be like, "Keep it clean, keep it clean." I was like, "I am."
That
clean.
Is about as clean as it gets in LA. Right.
Right. I was like, "What do you want me to do? I'll keep it clean. I'm not an idiot."
In the movie, you do an imitation of Russell Crowe. I'm wondering, was that part of a longer set, and they just cut it down to that? Because that's the fastest stand-up set we had ever seen.
But the audience loved it.
And the audience loved it in the movie.
The
yes.
quickest victory of all time in stand-up, yeah.
You own that room.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was just a little – I can't remember. I think it was in the beginning of that script, it was just like it was a little, "Hey, Peter does an impersonation," or something like that. And I kind of ran some stuff by him, and I ended up doing the Russell Crowe bit. And I, you know what? I think it was in the script, it was a Russell Crowe impersonation. And then I improv the Russell Crowe line.
Awesome.
So they just wanted something Russell Crowe, but that was my realm to be in. So you're
great.
Right. You know?
You
guys like a beautiful mind?
This script just keeps getting better and better.
Like, I don't know if you know, guys, but I know all of Les Mis.
Right.
I'm into
this.
No, just
you guys like Godspell?
Did you have any personal discussions with Ray Comfort on the set?
You know, this was really funny, because I'm smart enough to know with religious people, especially evangelists, where I am in my beliefs, which are not really something that I'm confused about daily. Where I am, it's like I wanted to kind of keep my distance and not talk about that, just in regards to professionalism. Mm-hmm. And I think there was one time where we were outside where he started to just kind of ask some questions, and it wasn't too intrusive at all. And he kind of like had me rate my level of belief. And I was just, I was pretty honest with him. And he just started just one-on-one kind of talking. And he wasn't preachy about anything, but I guess he had wanted to have that conversation with me for a little bit, but he kind of
that
restrained.
That is sort of what
he
does. I mean,
yeah.
That
sure,
is
yeah,
him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that legal? Like, can he ask you what your religious beliefs are before?
You know,
he
I don't know.
He's not hiring or firing him based on it, so I don't think it would make a difference.
Well, I mean, that's a good question though, Jessica, because it's like I was thinking about this today, like how offended everyone is by anything these days, and like I guess I'm just not from the place where I get offended by like things that people say to me in like a one-on-one situation. So when he brought it up, I was just like, "Oh no." And I was open about it. And I didn't really, you know, say, "I don't want to discuss this" or anything like that. But, it was pretty cordial. I mean, it was as casual as it could have been.
Was he really involved in the process?
Of the process of the movie?
Of filming the movie, like, was he on set?
Yeah, he was on set. He wanted to, which is, you know, he was on set about every day. He was doing a lot of behind the scenes footage. He would just kind of, he was really, really good about letting everybody work, letting everybody have their space. So the cinematographer and the lights and sound and everybody like that, he would kind of just check in and say, hey, do you mind telling me what's going on here? So I can like get some behind the scenes footage. And everybody was pretty cooperative. So he just kind of liked to be around and check it out. And he wasn't really, you know, he was never a bother, actually.
Yeah. How much did you know about Ray Comfort before the film? And at what point did you realize, oh, so that's who Ray Comfort is?
And did you see the banana video?
Got to ask about the banana video.
You know, before the audition, my manager usually does the due diligence on what projects I get on. And that she represents a lot of clients. So she does as much as she can as far as the surface level due diligence on anything as far as the legitimacy. So she looked at that. I didn't really look at much besides like street interview stuff. But the street interview stuff I looked at was really like, I don't know what other people think of it, but it's kind of what I come to expect from somebody that says like they're very, very religious. So if you were to tell me, hey, this guy produces a faith-based film and he owns a faith-based production company, I would expect to find some videos online of that guy doing some soapbox preaching somewhere. So I didn't really, but he's got so much content out there that I can't sit down for 3 hours to find what I'm going to be offended by.
Not like your character.
I mean?
Yeah, though your character has watched quite a bit.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's on the back of my eyelids when I sleep. So, yeah. But yeah, so it was really, really towards the end of filming once I got like a whole aspect of, you know, like what he did, what his stance on things were. That's about the time I knew that he did 180, those kind of things.
So banana video, yes or no? Because that's this part of the check. You know, it's a very important question.
I did see that video, but the video to me, like, I didn't know if they were kidding. Do you know what I mean? Like,
nobody knows.
Join the club.
Nobody knows for sure. He maintains that it was a joke.
Ray Comfort says it's a joke. However, it's
I
not
don't
a joke.
Think it's a joke. I don't know.
If it's a joke, it's like it's weird because if it is a joke, it's almost like there's a hidden genius there. You know what I mean? Because it was so dry.
It's made to go viral.
Do you think Ray Comfort is Andy Kaufman-ing us all?
Yeah, it's got to be.
But
it's got to be Jesus and Andy Kaufman.
Here's my thing. My theory about that, and it is founded on nothing but my own ramblings, but my theory on that is that he made it in seriousness and then saw its reaction and then, like,
sure, pretended it's a joke.
Oh, you know what it's like? It's like The Room by...
Oh, my God.
I can't think of his name. Anyway, have you ever seen The Room, Travis?
Yeah. No, you know, I haven't.
Tommy Wiseau.
It's just, like, this movie that was... It's notoriously bad, and it's been, like, shown in midnight shows and, like, gained this cult following. This is so off the point.
But it was made in a very serious
way. In a very serious way, and then he realized that people were kidding about it. He's like, oh, I was totally in on the joke. We're like, Tommy, no, you weren't.
I can tell you, and you can use this to the best of your knowledge for yourself, he is a very broad sense of humor. So I don't know.
So
I don't know
subtlety.
If that helps with anything.
No, it does. It does.
He's not your Ricky Gervais of subtlety. So just know that.
I also want to point out that when we asked Ray Comfort about you, because you and your co-star Molly Ritter, he did say this, and I want to quote this to make sure I get it right. Ray Comfort said this, knowing that you guys are pro-LGBT rights. Travis and Molly are both excellent actors and wonderful people. They are also extremely professional, and we really enjoyed working with them and getting to know them, what they believe is their business. Which I thought was a really wonderful answer.
That's a classy thing to say.
Yeah, it's a very classy thing for Ray Comfort to say. So kudos to him for going for merit instead of trying to find other Christians.
Yeah, and I did see that, and a lot of people... especially within the last 2 weeks, especially like gay people with the ruling and on how they know how Ray stands on the ruling and things like that. It's like, you do have to give credit where credit's due. And you really have to applaud someone that says something that is bigger than what you thought they were. Mm-hmm. And I honestly, if I'm telling you just person to person about Ray, he's a really, really nice guy on set. He always asked me if I needed some water, anything to eat, if I got enough to eat, how the day's going. So I really do have to credit the fact that he's a really nice, genuine, giving guy that just has such a strong belief in his convictions.
Yeah, you know? And I will add to that I know plenty of atheist groups in California who have interacted with Ray over the years. I've always heard the same variation of that story, is he's great in person. Yes, he has those beliefs. He's wrong. We want to criticize his beliefs, but he is a good guy, which that's kind of what you hope for.
Well, and Hammond, wouldn't you say you and I have had this interaction time and time again where Travis, on this show, we try to get people
who disagree with us on a lot of things.
And we think that's really important is to get different points of view. And I will say, without fault, I don't think we've ever interviewed anybody who like we flatly disagree with. And there have been several who I wouldn't go get a beer with after the podcast. You know what I mean? And I think the way people stand is, I don't know. It's
the one thing that was really, really interesting to me, if I can add, was after I met him, like, so you go into something and you find out information on somebody and you find out some past experience with somebody and their beliefs on something. And towards the end, like the ending day of filming, it's like familiarity is such a strangely powerful thing. You know what I mean? When you're constantly interacting with somebody, when you're running into somebody, when you're having one-on-one discussions with somebody, when you're sharing something with somebody, it's just so crazy how you look back on it and you're like, I'm supposed to hate this person.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? The familiarity is a crazy, crazy thing that a lot of us discount.
Well, and I think, and not to get too broad about it, but you saw that all the time when sort of the dominoes were falling in terms of LGBT rights, of these like hard and fast Republican senators or whatever, all of a sudden their son is gay, and all of a sudden I understand homosexuality is fine because it's there in their life. It's not some abstract other thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Does this change, was your working on this particular film, does that change how you may approach projects in the future? Like, are you more willing to step outside your comfort zone?
Absolutely. It definitely does. I love the work that I did on the film. I never get to see the work until the edited project. I was, albeit a few parts, I was very, very happy with my performance. I think that I said some things that, you know, I never thought that I would be able to pull off on camera, and it worked. And that's honest. You know, it's a funny, funny thing, but it's really honest how I look at some text, and I'm so detached from it, and I'm just sitting in a room going, how can I make this work?
Yeah. And I will say, and I said earlier when Hammett and I were talking, and it's not just because we have you on the show, but I thought you and Molly were both really winning. Like, your performances were good.
Great.
The Move Me wasn't my favorite thing I've ever seen. And sure, like, there may be some things I would have changed. But no, I think that you guys,
the performances were
you
great.
Guys showed up every day, and I commend you for that.
Have you gotten more shit after the movie came out? Have you gotten more shit from gay people mad at this project, or from Christians who realize you're not the character you played in the film?
You know, it's specifically to answer that question, I've gotten more from gay men that are like, you know, like, who the fuck do you think you are?
Sure.
with me doing the role, and it's like, I'm in a weird spot because like, It's like some of my gay friends, it's like it makes them more mad when I try to defend myself as an artist. And I'm like, you guys know how I feel. So why? I mean, I don't get what this is coming from. If you know that I support and you know that I retweet, and it's like, I didn't promote the movie. I wasn't legally obligated to promote the movie. And it's not something that I ever did, but it's like, it's a lose-lose. It's like the first really big lose-lose that I've ever been faced with until you guys actually wanted to have a discussion about it, which is great.
And I mean, and to be perfectly frank, if I didn't know, if Hammett didn't come across your tweets, I would have assumed you were part of that, like, movement, that conservative anti-gay movement, because
What else would we have to go on? But on the flip side, I don't at all fault. Like, I have tons of friends who are working actors and comics. Like,
and I think if any of them got the chance to be a lead role in a movie that you know was going to get marketed and promoted, there's not a lot of people. I mean, it's easy to talk when that offer's not on the table. Yeah. I don't know a lot of people who would say no to that.
I don't know. My friend was in Mamma Mia for 2 years. She had to sing Dancing Queen every night. Sometimes you do things.
I did do an audition in college. I auditioned for a role, and they were looking for brown people. I'm like, I'm in.
Oh, that's
sweet.
You.
Sweet. I'm going to get.
You're brown as fuck.
I had to read lines saying I'm a terrorist who wants to blow up the Trade Center.
There you go.
No.
And the only thing stopping me at that point was I have a test on the day of filming. I can't do this.
Wait, hold on. I thought
about it for a bit.
You're an actor?
I really wasn't. And that was kind of the problem, too. But I know what you're saying, Travis, about, I mean, this was a good role. It's a challenging role. And I think, especially for you being from the comedy world, here's a chance to do what so many comedians want to do and show off your acting chops in a dramatic role. That's a hard thing to stay away from when it's on your resume. Look, I do comedy. Look, I do drama. Mm-hmm. That looks really good for anything in the future. And I'm also,
that said,
I get where your gay friends are coming from.
Yeah, no, I completely do. I feel for you, Travis, that you are in kind of a, you're definitely in a rock/hard place situation that I'm not super envious of. Oh, I want to talk about your relationship with Molly. Not your relationship, but just kind of when you guys were on the set together, when did you figure out you were, or did you figure out that you were kind of like, oh, this is a little out of my element, and are we in this together? What were those conversations like?
Right. Well, this is what's funny, because it's like, it turns into like Sherlock Holmes. It's like a detective, like on set. You're like, which one of you is the dark one? So as you're like navigating through the set. So you start to slowly like find out who you can say offensive things to. So Molly was one of the first people that I was like, I got some kind of like subtle hint from her that she wasn't very religious. And we were open to kind of like have whatever conversation we wanted to have. And so I kind of just, you know what? We carpooled one day to base camp, and that was where we kind of like started talking about everything. And even then it's like, we both kind of like agreed to, it's not really, I mean, what do you really need to say to somebody that's religious? That's like, you don't want to offend them, because why, you know, what's the reason if you can just kind of be professional and kind of work in the same environment for the greater cause, you know,
we should teach you our atheist handshake. That will help next time. If you come to Chicago, we'll teach you the handshake. It's really important.
It was funny, because when you watch the movie and you listen, like early on in the film, when your character says he's a Christian, the character Diana that Molly is playing comes right back with these questions that I've heard so many times before from other atheists, which is just the, that face, followed by, so you hate gay people, so you do this. And I'm watching Molly portraying that character. It's like, she's really good at this. Like, I don't know if that's in the script or she's improvising, but like, she's had that conversation before. And that's one of the part. I mean, for all the criticism we might give the script, that was pretty dead on in terms of the reaction, I think. I mean,
It's exaggerated.
Exaggerated in some ways. But yeah, I've seen that reaction before. So I was
both parts were exaggerated, how it's like aggressive atheist, cool Christian.
Yeah. Right.
It's like both of those, they were totally like polar opposites of like the extreme versions of those things, which was, I don't know. You have to dramatize it, I guess. So subtly, I guess that's what they did.
Okay. Here's the really big question. Him and I discussed a lot. What is the relationship between Peter and Diana? What is the relationship? Because at first it was like they're just coworkers, and then
you're bringing her flowers while she's in a coma,
she's going to text when you're in a convenience store.
I can give you an exact, because this was never really discussed, but I can tell you one piece of information, and you can create your whole world out of it.
All right,
So on set, when we were doing a scene in the comedy club, when she comes to sit with me when I'm
toward
watching
the end of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. When we're going to hug our director right before the take, because I didn't really know either what that relationship was, the director right before the take was like, you're going to get up and hug her. a little bit more than a friend hug. Yep. I was like, but that's as far as it went.
So I was like, so you grabbed her ass.
Right.
Right, exactly.
So it's a little more than a friend hug. That's the status of your relationship,
that's
which
it.
Is
that's
very,
hugging.
That's not an option on Facebook,
and that,
though.
And that, that's where babies come from. Right. It's not the stork from that.
Oh my God, I just snorted on the podcast for the first time.
Have you had a chance to talk to Molly since the film came out? I don't want you to speak for her or divulge anything she said to you in confidence. But
you can if you want.
But have you talked to her since the film came out? And has her reaction and the reaction that she's gotten in her personal life, is that similar, do you think, to your own? Or has she gotten a different sort of perspective on this?
We haven't discussed it too much. I just remember after the film got released, and we didn't really start like an open dialogue consistently until I started getting tweets, and then she saw it. And so she was like, wow, really blowing up here on Twitter. And then so we started just going back and forth, because she supports LGBT too.
Right.
And so we already knew that about each other, so we didn't have to sit there and defend our stances on that. But it was just pointing out like, wow, really, things are really heightening on Twitter right now. So that's about as far as we went.
Cool.
And what are you going to do now? What's in your immediate future now that this film is kind of done with?
You know, I'm always doing stand up around LA. I don't tour much because of acting here. But I have a comedy that I just a comedy sketch that I just shot with John Rohde, who was the cinematographer on Audacity. So we immediately we immediately hooked up and did a really, really dark comedy sketch that's going to be out really soon. It's based on two hillbillies that have horrible, horrible information and think that they know what's wrong with the world these days.
So like real hillbillies.
So, right. Well, it's two very, very big hillbilly characters that are discussing how they think that what's happening on Mortal Kombat X is exactly what kids are doing to each other on the school ground.
Tale as old as time.
Right. So they're like freezing each other and sticking spears through each other and turning into sorcerers. And it's just, yeah. So it's that's my world is comedy and characters and things like that. So I'm doing that right now.
And one last question for you. What do you hope people who watch the film, what do you hope they take away from it?
That's a really, really good question. And I don't know if I have the most amazing answer right now, because I didn't think that many people would see the film. So it's not really, do you know what I mean? So it's not really something that you really concern yourself with when you know it's not going to reach a huge audience. You know, it's like a film is going to do, it's like, this is what people on both sides don't realize that are atheists, that are Christian, that are gay. The film is going to do exactly what it was going to do anyway. It has a limited audience. It's like atheists weren't going to see it. Mm-hmm. A few gay people were going to see it and try to show their friends, and they were going to stop watching 5 minutes through. Christians are going to love it because it's like the first thing that they've done that's like very, very well produced, albeit a few projects. So it's not really, it doesn't really have the power to like move a lot of people in a big, big way. It's like, I don't know, with Christians, the best answer and the obvious answer is that I hope that it does show them that, you know, I mean, gay people are, yeah, they're different than you, but I would love for it to say, hey, leave them alone, but it doesn't, you know. I would love for gay people to be like, hey, Christians don't hate you, but gay people don't believe that anyway. You know what I mean? It's like, they don't. They gay people don't believe that Christians hate them. It's like, you have Christians and you have assholes, and then you have gay people that are understanding, and then you have assholes. It's like,
right. They're
not directly a part of the community. They're just an asshole.
Yeah.
Let me add to that, and not putting words in your mouth, but I would... we said this earlier, like, should you watch this film or not? Jessica doesn't want people necessarily to buy the film off of Ray's site.
No offense, Travis.
Yeah. I think they should.
You're not getting residuals. I feel really bad then.
I think they should in some capacity. And I would say that for the same reason I've visited and paid for admission to the Creation Museum twice, which is that...
Twice.
Twice. which is that it's an educational thing as an atheist to see what the other side is saying.
Yeah.
And I think it's worthwhile to see it firsthand from their perspective instead of through someone else's filters. And I think it's important to know what someone like Ray Comfort thinks about gay people, how he argues, how he does the heavy-handed metaphoring and all that.
Yeah.
And there's a value
to
that.
Yeah, this is I can exactly see where Jessica's coming from. I really do, because I'm an emotional person that acts on emotion, and I get it. I totally get it, and I'm totally empathetic. So I definitely understand where you're coming from. Now, as far as what you just said, Hemant, is I love the fact that you said that you should go buy it online because of this. This is the only reason why. And my girlfriend is a therapist, so maybe this is her talking. But you reward good behavior with a person that's going, look, this is what you need to be doing. And this is what Ray needs to be venturing into is, hey, let's try to understand each other. And let's try to have a conversation with an understanding of, hey, look, we understand that you think like this. We think like this. Let's have a discussion about it. So in a way, rewarding good behavior on making a project that is a little less heavy-handed may be good, you know? So I agree.
And I think it is important that, you know, both sides too, it's so easy, and I've seen it through atheists, mm-hmm. and I've definitely seen it on the other side. It's always very easy to create caricatures mm-hmm. and stereotypes, straw men of what the other side has to say. It means a lot more. You are more effective in terms of advocating for LGBT rights when you can say, here is what the other side did. I know it because I saw it. I experienced mm-hmm. it. This is their own words. We've spoken on this podcast before with the Right Wing Watch.
Yeah.
And like, why are they, in my opinion, why are they so effective? Because all they do is take the right wing people in context, and they just say, this is what their actual words are. You don't have to say anything more. So I think there's some value in saying, look, this is how Ray Comfort argues. So if you want to combat that vision, you should know exactly what they're doing.
No, and I did mention earlier, and I will concede that the scene with, oh my God, it was so heavy-handed, but like with the train tracks and the car and the guy pulling out of the car.
Yeah.
Like when the guy...
And the newspaper, news reporters explaining everything to you.
Oh my God, this is my brother and this is... But like, I did say, this is the... If that is really, if really, 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 really Ray Comfort thinks that we are also in danger of going to hell, that if he doesn't like proselytize to everybody he finds, that it is like letting people get hit by trains. If that's really what they believe, that was a good way to put it. And it makes me slightly more empathetic. It will not make me want to talk to people in the street. I will not, but I get it.
That brings up a good like curiosity to me. It's like, I'm glad that we're talking, because now I'd love to ask him if, like, I wonder if that feels like a burden. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I wonder if he feels burdened by the fact that, like, he has a quota that he constantly is, like, thinking about. Like, because I think that his motto is, at least in his emails, is until the nets are full, which is, like, sure, it's poetic, but, like, there's got to be a lot of burden there. Do you know what I mean? And I wonder if he feels that and is willing to admit it, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, it's just what we were talking about earlier.
I don't think anyone doubts Ray's sincerity with what he's trying to do. I mean, it doesn't mean he's right. Doesn't mean you have to like it.
Right.
But I don't think he's like playing a character. I will give him that. I think he's genuinely serious about, I think he really does believe if you are gay, you are falling down that elevator shaft and someone has to rescue you. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the way he presents that idea is maybe funny. But that, I mean, I think he really does believe that.
Wait, I'm sorry. Are we going to finish this interview by saying, like, Ray Comfort is the good guy? Like, I feel like 3/8.
No, that's fine. We'll splice
this. That can't be the end of this interview.
We'll make sure the banana video part of this comes at the end of the interview, and it'll all be okay.
No, yeah. I mean, just because here's what I would like to leave it on, because I will not let this finish this way. Just because he thinks that just because that's his sincerely held belief does not mean it's right, and it does not mean it's okay to legislate and rally against gay people.
Sure, and I agree. I'm from the camp of who gives a shit. Do you know what I mean? Like if it doesn't have anything to do with me, it seems really, really dismissive. But it's just like with Christians, like if it doesn't have anything to do with you, I think it's I think it's a stepping ground that you shouldn't be allowed onto. Do you know what I mean? It's like worship within yourself.
Right. And I think that's, Hemant, why you found success on your blog is because you're not going around shitting on Christians for no specific reason, just because
I have very
something
specific reasons. Yes.
But you, and when I write for your blog, it's this is what's happening, and this is the lens through which we're viewing it. We're not like, this person believes in God. Let's remind everybody why that's probably dumb. Like, that's kind of
no, there's
your
a reason,
jam.
Because it's legislation.
Right.
When it's affecting people that I care about, I get mad. If you just believe in God, I disagree, but I don't really care.
Right, exactly.
And I think, Travis, that's what you're getting at, too. Like, if Ray Comfort believes this stuff, so be it. But if he's trying to push to ban gay marriage, then we have a problem.
Right.
And that's a different issue altogether.
Yeah.
Of course.
So, but, Travis, where can people find you? Where can they watch your sketches? Where can they find you online?
You know, I'm opening up a channel pretty soon that'll be on Twitter. Twitter's the best place to follow me. It's where I promote everything. T. Owens Comedy. Travis Owens, just T. Owens Comedy. On the Twitter handle. Facebook, don't really do a lot of action on there because no. but yeah, Twitter's the easiest place. I update shows where I'm at, and I love to talk about religion in my shows. So if you can't get enough, swing on
maybe
by.
For the bumper for this episode, we should have the Audacity cover, but rainbow-fied on Facebook.
I'm down.
Sure, go ahead.
Ray Comfort will love
down
it.
On that.
There we go.
You can be in charge of that.
All right. Travis, thanks so much for your time. Good luck with your career, and thanks for being willing to talk to us, because trust me, this is not an easy thing, I think, for a lot of actors to do, and I don't think a lot would have done it, so thanks.
No, I appreciate it, guys. It was a lot of fun, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thanks, Travis.
All right, bye.
All right, we'll see you later. Thanks so much again. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening to the podcast for FriendlyAtheist.com. This episode was taped at Cinnamon Sound Studios in Aurora, Illinois, and the music was written and performed by Brad Chagdis. If you like what you're hearing, please consider making a contribution at patreon.com/Hemant. That's He-Man T. We appreciate your support. I'm Hemant Mehta.
And I'm Jessica Blumke. We hope you'll join us next time.